If you've never been to the Rock Shop on Godfredson, get ready to be amazed. To experience the Rock Shop is to see how utterly beautiful your home can be. From a magnificent collection of brick pavers to unlimited possibilities of retaining walls, slate patios, statuary, and fountains. The Rock Shop on Godfredson has it all, and they'll teach you to install for free. You'll get one-to-one instruction, no charge. The Rock Shop serves the entire Southeast Michigan area as a full supplier of landscaping supplies and materials. Their selection spans across more than 12 acres of property, making the Rock Shop one of the largest hard landscape supply companies in Michigan. Make sure to stop by the Rock Shop in Plymouth, north of M14 at exit 15, southwest corner of Godfredson Road and North Territorial. Check online at rock-shop.com. That's rock-shop.com. rock-shoppe.com. Or call 734-455-5560.
Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
Good Sunday morning. And it's our last Sunday before the election on Tuesday, so it's going to be a pretty important day. And thanks to Linda and Theron, I have an extra half hour to cover stuff today, which is pretty awesome. So thank you to them for doing that. So we've got a lot to go through. What I want to do today is go through not only the week's current events, but some of the stuff that's important for the election. So bear with us as we go through. And as always, you can call in 734-822-1600. Let's take care of business real quick. The Rock Shop is our sponsor this half hour, located on North Territorial and Godfredson Roads, just north of M14. Now, the Rock Shop has Rocktoberfest going on now. It's up to 50% off a lot of items in their place, statuary, garden benches, fountains. And if you haven't been there, you need to at least stop by. Tell them Gary sent you. You want to see the stuff. They've got great statues, great fountains. They have the best supplies when it comes to pavers and wall building, stuff for your deck and outside area. Now, remember, you know, hardscape is an investment. It's not an expense. So you want to make sure you get the right product for your needs. And Marco and Helena Scapatigi can instruct you in that. And they will teach you how to install it for free. Let me say that again. They will teach you how to install it for free. Now, you can reach Marco and Helena at 734-455-5560. You can also go online, www.rock-shop.com. Now, I've been in and out of that place a number of times, and it's a fun place just to hang out. Marco's even got this little shop at the back with unique stones and geodes and Indian arrowheads, and just a lot of miscellaneous stuff. Great place to take the kids and show them some stuff. He's got some wonderful geological oddities in the back of the shop there. So great place, 734-455-5560. Now, you know what we do here every week. We go over the week's current events, and you can reach me at gary@thedailydrift.com. And you can see The Daily Drift by going to currentonline.com. That's CourantOnline.com. Click on The Daily Drift, and every day I take hours of my day away and peruse the internet to bring you the stuff that you need to see. There's a lot of information out there, and none of us really have time to do that. I'm not sure where I find the time, but I bring the things to you that you really need to know to make decisions in your elections, in your normal everyday life, and what you're not getting from the mainstream media. So go to The Daily Drift and check that out. Now, you can hear podcasts of this show and all the previous podcasts at www.thedailydrift.com. We've got a new website coming together pretty quick here for The Daily Drift. So we'll be changing things up a little bit, but it's going to be awesome. So it's taken me a little while to put it together, but we're getting there. So we have Jenny on line one. Jenny, go ahead real quick. Let's see what you got.
All I got to say is this. God bless everyone. Please, conservatives, get out and vote. Please, Christians, if you have your head stuck in the sand and you don't think anything is going to work anyway, please get off your butts and vote anyway.
Well, thanks, Jenny. Thanks for all you do and being informed. You know, that's the first step for anybody, being informed. And you get informed by listening to Wham Talk 1600.
Okay, well, that's all I had to say.
Great. Thank you, Jenny, for calling, and good luck to all of us on Election Day.
And God bless America.
All right. Thank you, Jenny. So, Jenny from Brownstown, a regular listener, often a caller. We've got a guest coming in today on the lines, and it's Manny Lopez, who is the managing editor of Michigan Capital Confidential, and he's going to help us go through the ballot proposals. Now, these are very important ballot proposals. Probably one of the biggest things I've seen in the state of Michigan in all my years of voting. Manny, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Gary. Glad to be here.
Glad to finally get to talk to you in person. We've been emailing back and forth, I know, and but it's good to see you. And I want to thank you first and foremost for everything that you guys do. One of the reasons we like you guys to be included in our papers because you have information that nobody else seems to have or wants to disseminate. So thank you very much for everything that you do.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I spent 8 years at the Detroit News and various jobs, and I've been at the Michigan Capital Confidential now for close to a year. And the work that we're doing at Michigan Capital Confidential is far and away more investigative and more substantial than almost anything I did at the news.
Right. I mean, you guys are true journalists. Now, a lot of people say, oh, they're just a conservative think tank. No, you guys are not. I've seen you beat up on Governor Rick, as I do sometimes, and you do cross the party lines. You do what I believe in, which is common sense. You promote common sense ideas in government public policy. And that's not conservatives normally are when it comes to financial situations, common sense people. So it is important. I'm glad you made that switch and happy to have you on today. So I know you said you're not completely feeling experienced in all six of these proposals. Two and four are your specials, right?
Yeah, well, I've done speeches around the state on all six. I can talk about all six, but two and four are the ones that will affect Michigan, and especially two more than the others.
Well, I'm going to defer to you as the expert here, anyways, because you're far more educated on all these issues than myself or probably most of our listeners. So, let's start with Proposal One, Manny. This is the referendum on the Emergency Manager Law. You want to give us the background because a lot of people don't really think about it, you know.
Yeah, sure. So the Emergency Manager Law has actually been around since the 80s, and it has been used by both Democratic and Republican governors. It used to be different. It used to be Public Act 72, and governors could appoint emergency managers. They were then called emergency financial managers, and they would go into communities that were struggling and school districts like Ecorse and Pontiac and whatnot, and try and work within the confines of the union contracts and try and get people to sort of bend and whatnot. It was helpful, but it wasn't ultimately didn't work out very well. So Governor Snyder signed a bill that turned it into Public Act 4, which made it the Emergency Manager Law. And the difference was that emergency managers could go in and they could change contracts, they could get rid of contracts, they pretty much could go in and rewrite some of the rules that had led these communities and school districts into financial ruin. And only then did the unions in particular get upset with it because their contracts could be affected. And so they got together, AFSCME and some of the other big municipal government union folks got together, and they put this petition drive together. And basically what Proposal 1 is, as you said, it's a referendum. And you're voting on whether you want to keep the law or remove the law. So on this one, it's kind of weird. If you vote yes on Proposal 1, you're voting to keep the law in place. And if you're voting no, you're saying, no, I don't want the emergency manager law to exist anymore.
Yeah, and let's put it in kind of simple terms. Since probably the 60s, I guess, the unions have taken our public sector, and I wish I knew more about how unions even got into the public sector, but public sector has got unionized and have increased benefits, pensions, and salaries to the point where they make more than people in the private sector now. You didn't used to be that way. And that is now the main cost to most municipalities is the salaries, pension, and benefits, correct?
Yeah, pensions and benefits in particular. And, you know, the thing is that unlike with private unions, the government unions are negotiating with people who they helped elect. So they're negotiating with people that they contributed to their campaigns, and they expect to pay off a lot of times. And so, and the taxpayers don't really have a voice in it because, you know, how successful can you be if you call your local legislator, your state legislator, and say, I don't think you should vote yes on that contract when, you know, that union has contributed, you know, $5,000, $10,000 to your campaign. So right. There's an inherent problem with it. I mean, FDR even said that he didn't think that public unions, public government employees should unionize because it's not beneficial to the public works.
All right, so let's hit that real quick because, you know, I'm fond of saying here that today's Democratic Party is not your grandfather's Democratic Party. So here's FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, saying the public sector should not be unionized. And yet today the Democratic Party, which has been hijacked by, you know, these progressive liberals, are trying to unionize everybody. So
yeah, well, they have to because the private sector unionization is decreasing significantly and has been. So they've figured that you can unionize government employees, and then, you know, there's a system where, like I said, you can then lobby the people who you contributed to, and you can continue this in perpetuity.
Right. So it's the typical hand in the cookie jar. So this is without a doubt a special interest, the unions and the union bosses. Trying to enshrine in the Constitution a way to get rid of the ability for the state to make a real difference on bankrupt communities, right?
That's what they're trying to get rid of. They're trying to get rid of Public Act 4. Now, if Public Act 4 goes away, the governor and the economists at the Mackinac Center say that Public Act 72 will come back into play. So the old emergency financial manager law will come back into play. And one of those two laws needs to be in existence in Michigan to help lead these communities into bankruptcy. Just the way the Michigan law in Michigan is structured is that they has to be some window for this is to be the first step before they could even get into bankruptcy. But bankruptcy ultimately is what will happen if communities can't pay their bills.
Okay, got it. So let's, I mean, at least you and I are in agreement on this one. It's a vote yes, without a doubt, vote yes on Proposal 1.
Just to be clear, I can't advocate a vote just because we're a nonprofit.
Okay.
But, you know, most of the people in the media, I mean, most of the editorial boards and whatnot and people in the know have said exactly what you do, a yes on one.
Okay. So I'm not restrained by that because I'm
right.
Not a nonprofit. So I'm going to tell everybody, vote yes, without a doubt. If you value the ability of this state to go into municipalities that are not working properly, where the governing body in the local municipality is not working properly, i.e. Detroit, Pontiac, Flint, bad school districts. This allows Public Act 4 to go into effect with the teeth to change those outrageously expensive pension and benefit plans. So we need this tool. This is a tool, is what it is, for government to correct complacency and sometimes gross corruption in a municipality.
Yeah, and one last thing on Proposal 1 is that there's about 2,300 municipalities and school districts. When you combine the two together, 8 emergency managers have been appointed in the history of the law. So we're talking about a very minimal, and these are only happening in communities that are in such serious financial trouble that, you know, the next step is just disastrous. So something to keep in mind. It's only happened 8 times.
Right, and you can tell by watching the news that the governor and the state has worked very hard to allow Detroit to fix their own problems, and they're still working on it.
Yeah, extraordinary measures, yes.
Yeah, nobody wants to come in and take over anything. That's not what we want to do. We just want, you know, fix it yourselves or we'll have to come in and fix it.
Exactly, so. Yep.
Okay, so Manny, let's move on to Prop 2. Now, this is the big one. This is the big union power grab. Let's talk about Prop 2.
So Proposal 2 is it's a law that would basically make collective bargaining a right in Michigan. And you've seen lots of commercials, and you've seen on both sides. The unions have put out the message, most recently anyway, that if they don't get Proposal 2, then workers won't be protected, firefighters won't be protected, teachers won't have safe schools, and that workers need collective bargaining to function properly. The thing is that Proposal 2, collective bargaining wasn't under attack. There was no bill in the legislature that was trying to take any of this stuff away. There was no action by the guy. In fact, the governor has said he doesn't want a right to work law to come across his desk. The unions, for whatever reason, maybe they were fearing the losses that they faced in Wisconsin and Indiana just became a right to work state. They took a proactive measure to try and enshrine in the Constitution specific benefits for them. And really what it does is it says that any collective bargaining rule takes precedence over any law that is written in the legislature. And that includes current, you know, past or even future laws. So the unions, in effect, could go back and say, hey, you know, you remember the Governor Engler, he changed pensions for union employees back in the late 90s, and it saved Michigan $4.3 billion. Well, that had to do with collective bargaining. We don't like that. So we want our state employees to go back onto pension plans.
Yeah.
What it does is it basically says that anything that has to do with collective bargaining, the unions have the upper hand.
Right. So it almost puts a fourth branch of government or a veto power to the unions over laws that we make and pass, right?
Yeah, exactly. It actually, you know, it almost mitigates what the legislature could do, because if it has to do with collective bargaining, the unions can basically have veto power over any single law. You know, the Attorney General says that there are up to 170 laws that could be affected. The Mackinac Center has also studied it and found similar numbers. And then we've also gone and seen, well, of those laws, how much have those laws saved taxpayers over time? And that those laws that could be affected have saved taxpayers, if it gets rolled back, about $1.6 billion a year could be added back to the taxpayers in cost savings that would go away. And so we're not just talking about the unions getting some protections. We're talking about them taking over Michigan government and protecting, as we were talking about with Proposal 1, protecting government union rules to benefit. In Michigan, only 3% of the workforce belongs to a government union. So we're talking, this was the Protect Our Jobs, if you remember correctly, and
yes.
Then apparently that hit too close to home. So they changed it to Protect Working Families to try and, you know, change some people's opinions without having to provide any of the facts.
Yeah, and it's. I was going to bring that up too. They changed the name of the proposal as they go along to see what sells best. You know, and as you said, if it's only 3% of the entire population, you want to talk about a special interest. You're going to hold 97% of the population hostage.
That's exactly right. And this ballot measure, I mean, aside from the presidential election and maybe one or two other races in the country, is generating more money flowing into advertising than any other in the country, because the stakes are high. If the unions are successful in Michigan, they'll take this measure to any other state that has the ballot proposal method in their state, and they'll try and duplicate it because they see that their numbers are dwindling and they need to try and boost them any way they can. But we have to be clear. I mean, there was no attack on unions whatsoever. And if Proposal 2 fails, nothing changes. The unions don't lose anything if Proposal 2 fails. And that's really important for voters to realize, because you can be in support of unions, and there are a lot of people who are. But there are also, I've talked to a lot of teachers in particular who have said, I mean, the Garden City School District, School Board, for example, passed a resolution that said we're opposed to Proposal 2 because it's short-sighted and it guarantees protections for a few at the expense of others.
Right. So let's hit that point too then. Federal law takes care of private unions. So
correct.
If you are a carpenters union, plumbers union member, this has no effect on you.
Exactly. And state laws already protect unions in Michigan. So there was no attack on unions. There isn't, you know, there was nothing that was happening that prompted this, except for the unions wanting to take more to benefit themselves.
Right. Okay. So without a doubt from me, I mean, I didn't have any doubt about this from the beginning when they started out with the Protect Our Jobs. I'm voting no, and I'm encouraging everybody to vote no, because we're trying to recover in the state of Michigan. And we're making some strides. Now,
yeah.
I'd like to go a little further and see the right to work like Wisconsin and Illinois and whatnot has done.
And in the end, that may happen. But if it does, the unions have no one to blame but themselves. Because,
right.
As I said, the governor didn't want this as an issue. And the business community in Michigan has basically said, you know what, we'll deal with this. We'll work with labor. Well, guess what? Labor didn't think that was enough. And so they went after Proposal 2.
Right. And I've had people call me and say, you know, why are you so anti-union? I'm not anti-union.
Right.
I mean, you have the right to go out and collectively bargain. You know, personally, for me, if I'm working at a place that's treating me badly, I'm out of there. I'm not going to spend or waste my time. I don't want to work for a company like that. And
right.
I think people should look at that idea first before you try and form a union. But But that's just me and the way I was raised. So, all right, well, let's. I think that's definitely, people should vote no, because that is bad for the state, it's bad for the taxpayer, and it's obviously bad for some union people, because there was a story about, is it Saginaw or Bay City Schools? Bay City Schools, where if you pass Prop 2, they will be able to allow teachers 5 chances for being drunk on the job.
Yeah, well, this was a story that we broke at Michigan Capital Confidential. So the Bay City Teachers Union contract states that teachers can be drunk at school up to 5 times before they're fired. And in that process, within the, you know, the third time or whatever, you know, they can be suspended. If they don't get counseling, they can be fired. But anyway, they can be drunk up to 5 times. They can be on illegal drugs 3 times before they're fired. And then get this is the one that really gets my hide going, is that you can sell drugs to students twice before you get fired.
Yeah.
And that was a contract provision that was written into the Bay City School District teacher's contract. Now, if Proposal 2 passes, they can write those kinds of things into their contracts without, you know, the possibility of it being stricken down by, I don't know, people with common sense.
Yeah. And you know, that's the one that hit me, too. I'm like, seriously? Yeah. A teacher can sell drugs to the students? You want to talk about a captive customer?
Yeah.
Now, here, buy my drugs. Yeah, yeah, that's outrageous. And how we're the consciences of a union negotiator on that one is just beyond me.
Well, and the administrators to say, yeah, we'll give you that because we want something else. I mean, no, in no world is that acceptable.
Yeah, somebody should be fired in that school system, I can assure you of that.
And we've asked Bay City whether they're going to remove that, because they're negotiating a new contract now, and we still can't get an answer as to whether or not they're going to get rid of that provision from their contract.
Bureaucrats. Well, thanks for breaking that story. That one really lit my fire, too, so I can understand your frustration. And the people should be frustrated. So vote no on 2 to ensure that we can get that kind of stuff out of our schools. Okay, so let's move on, Manny, to Prop 3. This is another special interest trying to enshrine something into the Constitution. And this time, the people who really back this aren't even from Michigan, are they?
No, they're mostly, the money is coming from a California billionaire, and it's being funneled through, you know, as they do now with all the elections. They funnel it to a front company that then gives it to the campaign committee. But most of the money is coming from California billionaire, who he fully believes in green energy and whatnot. Some of that's because he's got business interests in it. He spoke at the DNC. His name's Tom Steyer. But his money, and then some of the other money that's being pumped behind this too, they're trying to get Michigan to put a constitutional amendment together that says that 25% of a utility's electricity has to come from renewable sources by the year 2025.
No.
They've written into the provision that your rates can't increase by more than 1% a year, but that can be stretched on in perpetuity till this is, you know, paid off.
Right. Now, right now, Michigan is suffering under a 10% inclusion of green renewable energy, right?
Right. We have a 10% by 2015.
Right. And as of right now, I think maybe from you guys, that we're in the top couple of states for electricity rates?
Yes, we are. I mean, we've suffered from high electricity rates for a number of reasons. I mean, one of which is that we've granted specific utilities these sort of quasi-monopolies in the state, and that hasn't helped either. And some of the people who are in support of this, even some of the Republican strategy firms who are actually in support of this, say that, well, we need to do this to get rid of that monopoly. Well, this will do nothing to get rid of the monopoly. All it will do is put an energy mandate into the Constitution that will it will hamper Michigan with increased costs. I mean, there's been a study that says it will add $12 billion in costs to the state. The Mackinac Center did a study, and the state will lose 10,540 jobs by 2025 if this gets into the Constitution. And there's been a lot of, and the commercials all say that it's going to create 94,000 jobs. Well, that's from a completely ridiculous study that was done by the Michigan Environmental Council and Michigan State University. And what they did was they factored job years. And there's a difference between jobs and jobs years.
Yes.
And the study says very clearly job years repeatedly. And the difference is if you have one job for 5 years, that's one job, but it's 5 job years.
Right. Right. We actually covered that one on the show a couple months ago.
Okay, good.
You guys put that out because, again, it's people skewing the data to fit their own needs.
Yeah. So there's no way it's going to create. I mean, there are only 74,000 green energy jobs in the United States, according to the Department of Energy. So to think that Michigan will create more than that is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's outrageous.
And the other thing is that there's no other state in the country that has this in their constitution. Michigan already has a law, as do 30-some other states, but no state has added it to their constitution. And if green energy was such the savior, you certainly wouldn't need to add it to your constitution, and really you'd have people flocking to states to do it on their own. But we know that it's not. It's a government-subsidized industry.
Right. I mean, once again, it's the government picking winners and losers. Now, you know, for me, we covered in the show a while back that out of the stimulus funds that got passed for green energy stuff, was it $8 out of $10 actually went to China to build windmills. Which they then shipped back to us. Now, where's the sanity when it comes to taking that stimulus, forcing ourselves to use green energy, but paying somebody else to build our windmills?
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And the mandates that they're trying to impose upon Michigan residents will do nothing but make the environment for business and for individuals worse.
Okay. So that's a vote no in my book on Prop 3. This is going to drive your electrical costs at home as a taxpayer up, and it'll probably somehow screw us over on our taxes as well. We're hitting a hard break, Manny. Can you stick with us through the break, and we'll hit 4, 5, and 6 when you come back?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, thanks, Manny.
No problem.
We'll catch you all on the other side. Stay with us.
Talk 1600.
Hey, my blood brothers of freedom. This is Ted Nugent.
Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse.
God bless Ann Arbor and Wham Radio. I started doing interviews on Wham Radio around 1966. I celebrate and promote the God-given individual right as guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, for us to defend ourselves, to keep and bear arms. And just to make sure everyone understands what we the people understand, keep can only mean one thing. That's it's mine and you can't have it.
Wham.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen McHugh. Just what residents of the Northeast need a week after Superstorm Sandy devastated much of the region, it looks like a nor'easter could strike by midweek.
That is looking more and more scary, I hate to say it. Probably some very windy conditions, and for people who don't have power, wind all along the coast, maybe a little bit of storm surge.
Fox meteorologist Rick Reich muth heavy snow and drenching rains could accompany the system. Two Atlanta police officers were killed when the chopper they were patrolling in crashed near downtown.
The loss of an officer is probably the most difficult thing a chief of police can be to have to deal with, and magnify that twice. It's a very difficult time for not just me, but the entire Atlanta Police Department family.
Police Chief George Turner, the officers were looking for a missing child when the crash occurred. Last minute stumping in the battleground states, including Ohio for the president and Pennsylvania for the Romney Ryan team. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Many judges ignore laws they don't like and make new laws from the bench.
Not Colleen O'Brien, Steve Markman, and Brian Zara.
Colleen O'Brien, Steve Markman, and Brian Zara are Michigan rule of law judges.
O'Brien, Markman, and Zara rule based on the laws of Michigan. They don't pick and choose which laws to enforce based on personal preference.
That means O'Brien, Markman, and Zara stand up for families, women, and children.
They've made sure violent criminals, sex offenders, and rapists stay behind bars where they belong.
Other judges try to politicize our courts, but O'Brien, Markman, and Zara place the law above politics and stand up to special interests.
Colleen O'Brien, Steve Markman, and Brian Zara understand the role of a judge and believe crime victims deserve justice.
Colleen O'Brien, Steve Markman, and Brian Zara, Michigan rule of law judges who respect the rights of victims.
Learn more. Visit www.courtissues.org. Paid for by the Michigan Chamber of Commerce.
Newspapers say Proposal 2 has almost nothing to do with collective bargaining. It's already protected under federal law. That's just one reason why the Detroit Free Press says vote no on Proposal 2. Prop 2 is just a sweetheart deal for special interest. They want to lock their deal in the Constitution in good times and bad. It'll cost us a lot of money. Worst of all, Prop 2 could overturn 170 laws, including a law that helps protect our civil rights. It's outrageous. Decades of progress threatened. With Proposal 2, we'd go backwards. No wonder the Free Press calls it a mess waiting to happen. A sprawling overreach and sloppy. So sloppy that it creates unintended consequences, ones that hurt our community. That's why leading newspapers like the Free Press say, vote no. Proposal 2. Risky. Bad for our community. Paid for with regulated funds by protecting Michigan taxpayers.
Vote November 6th for Jim Fink, the clear choice for Washtenaw County Circuit Judge.
Jim Fink was rated first in every category of the Bar Association poll for this election.
Jim Fink was rated outstanding by the Women Lawyers Association of Michigan.
Jim Fink has broad-based bipartisan support.
Jim Fink is endorsed by 23 sitting and retired Washtenaw County judges and magistrates.
James A. Fink on the nonpartisan ballot.
The clear choice for Circuit Judge.
Paid for by the James A. Fink for Judge Committee.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
Well, welcome back, and thank you for catching my drift this Sunday morning, the last Sunday before Election Day. So we're trying to educate ourselves. But first, sponsor of this half hour is the Current newspaper. The November edition is out. You can go to currentonline.com. That's all one word, currantonline.com. Grow your business the way we've grown the Current over the last 5 years. We started at 5,000 circulation 5 years ago and are now at 35,000 circulation. So call Sam Iaquinto, 734-323-0777, and let us show you how you can grow your business like we've grown ours. So on the phone with us, educating us all about the proposals, we've gone one through three, and are now going to talk about four, five, and six. These proposals are so important that we asked Manny Lopez, managing editor of the Current Michigan Capital Confidential, to come on. Manny, welcome back, and thank you for educating us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right, so let's go into another biggie. This is Prop 4, and this is that scam of trying to get unions to keep taking money out of home health care workers. Give us a little background on this one so we can delve into this one.
Yeah, this one is, again, you talk about special interests trying to hijack the Constitution. The Service Employees International Union back in 2005 created this scheme when Governor Granholm was in office that basically allowed the SEIU to claim that people who take care of basically their friends and family in their homes are state workers, and therefore they can be unionized. And so they created this dummy agency, and they then started taking dollars out of the Medicaid checks of the elderly and disabled in Michigan. And in effect, unionized 44,000 in-home caregivers. Most of these people never voted in the election. Only about 20% of those people actually, you know, say, or at least we've been able to find out, that voted. And so they were unionized. And most people didn't even know it until they started to see their Medicaid disbursement receipts come to them, and it said union. And they were getting $20 a month taken out, whatnot. But nonetheless, people would try to find out, well, what happened? You know, who's my union? Why am I unionized? And, you know, the SEIU was just invisible and has done nothing for these people over the years. They take about $6 million a year from the Medicaid checks, and since the scheme started, has taken more than $32 million. And the reason that they want to put it in the Constitution now is because Governor Snyder signed a law this year that said that this was illegal. These people are not state employees, and therefore they can't be unionized. And the SEIU, you know, when you're getting $6 million a year, you're not going to go away quietly. So they figured, well, how can we get this permanently? Well, constitutional amendment. So you've seen a lot of commercials, and the commercials are all, you know, they're good commercials. They've got, you know, elderly folks talking about wanting to stay in their homes, and they've got veterans, and they've got disabled veterans, and they hit all the groups that will help try and sway voters. But what the ads don't tell you is that everything they promise already exists. And can continue to exist if Proposal 4 fails.
Yeah, it, for me, I know it'll never happen. I think these people in the SEIU who are involved with this and Jennifer Granholm should go to jail. I think it's criminal that they've been able to take money from the disabled, the infirm, the elderly, the people who need help and money the most. They're stealing to put into the coffers of SEIU.
Yeah, I talked to a lot of these folks. They don't really want to go on the record, but I talked to a family that so that they've lost a couple of $1,000 over the years to the SEIU, and it prevented them from buying a wheelchair. And that's exactly what this does, is that, and they get nothing. The union will say that they've gotten three raises. Well, they were tied to the increase in the minimum wage, so they've done that. They will say, oh, we're going to give them training. You know what? These people have been taking care of their disabled relatives. We just talked to a family the other day, the Milrons out of Macomb Township, and this woman's been taking care of her disabled son since he was an infant, and she said, I could train them in how to do this. There's nobody who can train me. I'm a mother. I'm not a union worker.
Yeah. And they talk about putting a registry together. Now, that registry already exists, and there's like, what, 900 or so names on it?
933 names out of 44,000 unionized workers. So, okay. Yeah, they talk about criminal background checks. But, you know, when 78% of the people are taking care of family and friends, you don't need a criminal background check. And if you do, you can already get that done. It's not – that doesn't require a unionization and money to be taken out of everybody's checks.
Right. And any private company that is doing this is already probably doing background checks. If you're worth your salt as a private company, you don't want to be sued by hiring an idiot or a criminal to take care of somebody.
Right.
They're doing background checks.
Private companies, they do this already, and they're very conscious about who's going in to take care of other people because their livelihood, their business depends upon it.
Yeah. Once again, it's somebody stealing for a minor, well, in this case, SEIU. And you guys have that rolling clock on MichiganCapitalConfidential.com, which I highly tell people, go to Michigan CapCon. It's the best way to stay educated on what's happening in Lansing. But it is. It's clicking up every minute, and it's at over $32 million right now.
Yeah, it is. You know, and the important things to think about, to remember about this ballot puzzle is ignore the commercials, because the commercials are complete fabrications and they're lies. The federal home help program has existed since 1981 that guarantees that people can stay in their homes. Nothing that this proposal do will change that. People will still be able to stay in their homes. And a criminal background check and a registry could be continued within a state agency. This doesn't require a unionization effort by any means whatsoever.
Okay. Now, you guys had, and this is an article you did, these people are forced into the union, but they get really nothing for it. And they're self-employed. They're not really government employees or employed by anybody in particular. But these people won't even get benefits from the state?
Right. So the union actually wrote the constitutional amendment language to say that they are state employees only for the sake of collective bargaining. And so it actually says they're exempted from getting state medical or retirement benefits. So the union clearly only wants them to be unionized, to be state employees, so that they can take their money. But further, they can only, the whole idea of collective bargaining, this third party, dummy employer that they want to create, can only suggest to the legislature the wages that they think that these people ought to get. The legislature decides the allocation of Medicaid money, so the legislature will decide. So this third party that they want to create, or that actually already does exist, they want to rename, it can't do anything what are they going to do, strike? You know, your mom is going to strike if she's taking care of a disabled son? I mean, so they have no benefit whatsoever.
All right, so this is a total scam. This is SEIU stealing money from the poor, the disabled, the infirmed, and the elderly. And people need to vote no on Prop 4. This is the biggest scam ever. And how anyone can live with themselves at SEIU. If you're an SEIU member, you should be writing your bosses and telling them, you guys make me sick, because this is unconscionable, without a doubt.
Well, let me tell you, that there's a group of SEIU employees right now who've already done that. They've actually come out and said they're SEIU workers at hospitals, so they're a little bit different, but they've said that the in-home care workers get no benefit, and they've actually said they shouldn't be part of our union. And so it's interesting because they've actually sued in federal court the SEIU over some issues that involve this. So they're already saying that. Another thing, too, which I think is just completely offensive, but Don Hoyle, who's the executive director of the ARC Michigan and is the spokesman for this campaign, came out and called Robert and Patricia Haynes. Well, he called Robert Haynes an idiot in an article in the Free Press. And Robert Haynes is taking care of his disabled adult kids. He's a retired Detroit police officer. And Hoyle, who, like I said, is the executive director of the ARC Michigan, which is an organization dedicated to helping disabled folks, came out in an article and said, oh, that guy's just an idiot. So, I mean, whenever you bring up anybody who's opposed to this, he and the unions just go bonkers about, you know, name-calling and trying to say, well, this is about, you know, veterans and that. No, it's not. And they won't answer the specific questions about unionization or the benefits that allegedly would be provided.
All right. Well, it's typical of the left when they have no facts to run on, when they know they're wrong, they resort to name calling, and that's absolutely typical. It didn't surprise me to see that. So, all right. Well, that definitely get people to vote no, vote no on Prop 4, because that's the biggest scam, and all it does is steal money from the poor, the disabled, and the elderly. Let's move on to Prop 5. This one's got a lot of people mixed up a little bit. This is requiring the 2/3 majority vote of the State House and Senate to increase our taxes. What's wrong with that?
Well, it depends on who you ask. The people who are opposed to this, a couple of things that they say. It says that, A, we have an elected legislature, and in Michigan we have a full-time legislature. And if we don't like the fact that these people are unwilling to do the hard things, then we can elect new people. You know, we've got that process to fix the problems that we have. They also will point to this specific proposal and say that it doesn't allow for tax shifts. So if you wanted to, so the MBT deal, the Michigan business tax deal that was done last year, couldn't be done again unless you got 2/3 of the people to say, yes, we will increase taxes on whomever, you know, whatever group it is, so that we can fix the business tax structure. Now, some people still think that's a good thing. Other people think that that sort of ties the hands of legislatures to even do the right thing. And then the other thing is that it doesn't talk about fees in the proposal at all. So it doesn't mean the legislature couldn't go in and start tacking fees onto other things to try and keep some of the revenue or some of the streams that they have going.
But the other half of that, to get rid of that argument, is the fact that if the legislature can't figure out how to get 2/3 vote to, say, reduce our taxes, they can go to the vote of the people, right? 51%.
Right. They'll go to the vote of the people in a November election to see if the people want to do it.
All right. So this explanation that, oh, you don't want to do it because then we won't be able to reduce taxes is bogus, because in a general election, who's not going to vote to reduce their taxes?
That's true. And unfortunately, I don't foresee the legislature reducing our taxes on their own anytime soon.
Absolutely. I'd like to know, well, yeah, you're right. I mean, the only people I know that are for this are elected officials and people with their hands in government pocket. As far as
yeah,
I know.
You do. It's a weird connection that at this for this proposal, you actually do have unions and a good portion of Republican legislators who are together on this issue. Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it astounds me. Even some guys that I support normally on this issue are on opposite sides, and I'm thinking, what are you talking about? How is making harder for you to raise my taxes wrong?
Yeah. The only other thing is that California has a 2/3 tax amendment, and it doesn't necessarily curb spending because they get very creative. But that, you know, you can't forecast California's issues on Michigan either. So that's not exactly, you know, a given that it would happen here.
Right. Okay. So then let's move to Derek, do we need to do a break? No, we're going to skip through this break and go to Prop 6 and talk about the bridge a little bit.
Yeah, this is the Matty Maroon-backed proposal. Basically, what it says is that if any new international bridge or tunnel is going to be built in Michigan, it has to take a vote of the people to pass it and a vote of the people in the municipality in which it would originate. So basically, you would need two different votes to get an international bridge or tunnel built in Michigan. And this was, as I said, Matty Maroon has pumped in, I can't remember, $35 or $50 million into this campaign to try and protect the Ambassador Bridge monopoly that he has.
Right. Now, I understand, and I've had people call me names, actually. Again, it's a hot issue, saying, why am I protecting billionaire Matty Maroon? I'm not protecting billionaire Matty Maroon. Now, Matty bought that bridge fair and square. I think he was in a bidding war with Warren Buffett, as I recall. Wasn't that correct?
Yeah, it was. So I believe he was. I couldn't tell you authoritatively.
So he put his butt on the line, bought this bridge, and has done a good job, I think, of maintaining it, running it. People may complain it takes too long to get across the bridge. I've had that complaint. But that's not because of the bridge itself. That's because of security, getting back and forth through the United States security. So I don't understand. And the data seems to be showing, I mean, you correct me, isn't the data showing that we really don't need another bridge right now?
The bridge traffic doesn't warrant one right now. But with bridge projects, I mean, this is something that you do need to be looking, you know, 5-10 years down the road. And forecasts, as they always do, sort of say that traffic will increase. Currently, though, no. Traffic has been down. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, the manufacturers in Michigan, I think they would like to have another option for sure. And I don't know if that's because it's a, you know, Matty Maroon project, or it's just because, you know, they have to land in Windsor and go through 17 stoplights to get to the highway. But, you know, there are an interesting group of people who are against this proposal, even if they're not on the record against it, because I think they kind of want to see government build a bridge.
Right. Now, for me, I'm a free market guy. Number one, I know if the government gets into this bridge, and I don't know, what are they saying, $5 billion to build it or something?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
It's going to go into cost overruns. I have no doubt. I've never seen a government project yet that gets finished on time and on budget. So, you know, even though the Canadians, and you tell me, the Canadians are saying they're paying for it. How about that? Is it really a free bridge to us?
Well, interesting. I was at a town hall the other day with Governor Snyder and Ambassador Norton, who's not ambassador. He's the Canadian consulate here in Detroit, and he stood up, he put his right hand in the air, and I swear that Michigan. He says, I promise you, Michigan won't have to pay a dime. And he said it two or three times. And basically, what they're saying is that they are going to front all of the costs for the bridge. And what they're going to do is they're going to pay the private developer. And once the private developer gets paid back, then Canada gets its share paid back. And then once that's done, then it gets split amongst the two nations. So Canada insists that they're going to front the money and that Michigan taxpayers won't be on the hook. And in fact, with the deal the governor has set up, taxpayers can't pay any because he can't do a deal with like that unless no taxpayer money is going to be spent. So the governor has said that he believes that his bridge will get built regardless of this proposal. You know what's going to happen with this, and probably with a lot of the others, is that the people who are going to benefit from these proposals are going to be the lawyers.
Right.
You know, so sadly, there's going to be a lot of time taken after Tuesday to try and sort through the winners and the losers in this. But, you know, that's kind of what happens when you have this many proposals on the ballot.
All right. So, Manny, we got a question from Lawrence in Ann Arbor. Derek, can I just hit line one there? Lawrence, welcome to the show. You got a question for Manny.
Well, actually, yeah. Have you heard anything about the deep water port the Canadians are planning in Nova Scotia? My understanding is that they really would like to have the second bridge because it's their plans to funnel the traffic into the U.S. through that bridge. The Windsor-Detroit crossing is the busiest crossing between Canada and the U.S. And Ontario, which is Windsor, is the most populous province in Canada. So if they're going to send a lot of business through Detroit and, you know, give a lot of business to the state as a result, wouldn't that make sense to have an alternative to a, what is that bridge, 80 years old right now?
Yeah, it's 83 years old, I think, yeah.
Yeah, have you heard about this, Manny, this deepwater port?
I haven't heard about that specifically. I mean, I've heard rumors that if a deal isn't done here, Canada's going to look to Buffalo to build a second span in New York. So I haven't heard about that one in particular, but I have heard that, and I don't know if that's a realistic thing or if it's sort of a threat, but it would make sense that, you know, there's going to be another international crossing somewhere, whether it be in Michigan or New York or somewhere else.
Right. I guess for me, and Lawrence, you can weigh in on this while you're on the horn here. I'm a free market guy. That's just the way I am. I don't ask for forgiveness for being that way. If Matty Maroon is willing to put his, I don't know if he's spending $5 billion, if he's willing to spend that money so that I don't have to pay for cost overruns, because I don't trust the Canadians, frankly, not that I don't like them. But I don't trust that the government can get this bridge built without cost overruns, which someone's going to pay for, and I don't want it to be me. What do you think about that, Lawrence? How do you feel?
I hadn't even thought about the cost overruns. If the Canadians, quite frankly, you're right. The devil's going to be in the details. Somebody needs to make sure that they're airing out something that's pretty smart. On the other hand, I understand Maroon had already improved his area, and he was just going to take over the whole thing. As the free market side is, how does competition hurt anything? If there could be overruns, couldn't they be over on his side as well as the Canadians?
Well, it's possible, but if it's his bridge, he pays for it. You know, what I've noticed as a private contractor in my past, when I gave somebody a quote to build something or to renovate something, I stuck with it. I couldn't go back to the customer and say, hey, by the way, I got a 20% contingency fee. You owe me another $10,000. But it seems on government projects, it's built in. Here's another 20% contingency fee. We're not going to use it unless we have to. But they use it every single time. I've yet to see a government contract that doesn't go over budget.
Well, does Matty Maroon have such deep projects such deep pockets that if he goes over, we aren't going to pay for it? I mean, he can cover that whole thing himself?
That I don't know, but he'd play heck trying to get us to pay for it.
There's a benefit out there. Somebody's going to have to pay for it.
Yeah.
I mean, if that benefit, if the price of that benefit winds up rising.
Yeah, my guess is Matty Maroon doesn't want to be beholden to anybody and will pay for it himself. But again, you know, I'm not. I do have this question, though. Manny, maybe you know this. I had heard, I think, on Jay McNally's show that the location they picked for this government bridge is on salt mines and salt marsh, which could lead to some severe problems long term if you're not building on bedrock. Is that true? Do you know anything about that?
I don't, unfortunately. I have not looked at the plans for where they want to build it. I do know that they don't want it anywhere near the current span because of the traffic issues in Canada, but I don't know about the new plan. I haven't heard that one yet.
Right, right. All right, well, Lawrence, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to some other things. And Manny, thank you so much for coming on and educating us all about this. I guess my final say on Proposal 6 is, if it's a good idea, let us make the decision on it. You know, I trust the people of Michigan to educate themselves, to look beyond the advertising from Matty Maroon. And, you know, if we really have a need for a bridge in the future and we want the government to pay for it, I'm not opposed to doing it if it makes sense. I don't know at this time that it makes sense for Rick Snyder to push it on us, especially when our legislature has already said no.
Yeah, you know, and I think, Gary, one of the things that you said was educate yourself. I mean, that's the big deal. I mean, and you got to sort of sometimes separate yourselves. You may be really in support of the unions, but really look at the details and do a little research. There's no end to the resources available, whether it be the current or Michigan Capital Confidential, because that's the thing, is that you got to do what's best for yourself and the taxpayers and the state. And sometimes even what you want to do in your heart doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Manny Lopez from Michigan Capital Confidential, Managing Editor. We will be reading and following you, Manny. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Gary.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care.
All right, so there you go, folks. 6 ballots. Don't take my word for it. I know I'm voting yes, no, 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 yes, yes. That's a quick little jingle Linda came up with down here. But nothing I heard today is changing my view at this point. I think on Prop 6, leave it to us to make that decision down the road. I think that the legislature said no, then I'm going to follow the lead and say, let's not do a bridge at this time. So let's move on to national election stuff, which is, I think we're all, 48 hours from starting the election, starting as of this morning. And I'm hoping all of you have already registered, and I'm hoping all of you are going to vote with some common sense. Michael Barone is an editor with the Washington Examiner and an incredibly smart guy. You'll see him on Fox occasionally. And he's going out on a limb, as I've been for the last week. He's saying Romney is going to defeat Obama, and he's saying he's going to defeat him handily. Now, I've been telling people for the last week or so, I'm thinking, watching the polls, and more importantly, watching what I see in my travels, because I just came back from Florida. We drove from Florida through the Carolinas, through Virginias, and Ohio and Michigan, and you know what? I don't see the support Obama had in 2008. I don't. And Michael Barone, obviously, is feeling the same way. So he went through the states, the swing states, that people are worried about. And he says Indiana is going to go Romney, uncontested. He's saying North Carolina will go Romney, uncontested. I mean, it's just not going to happen. He's saying Florida, for sure, will go Romney. Now, I believe that. I was in Florida. I talked to as many people as I could, drove wherever I could, and did not see Obama signs anywhere near the number that I saw Romney signs. Now, I was in northern Florida, so maybe down Miami way you're going to get more people voting. But I'm feeling pretty comfortable that Florida's going to go Romney's way. Coming through Ohio, I'd say 2-1 at least is what I saw Romney versus Obama. And I think the polls are wrong. The pundits have said they're still skewing the polls based on 2008 numbers and whatnot, but I firmly believe that Ohio may very well go Romney. I'm going to add Michigan in here because I do a number of quite a bit of traveling right here in Michigan. And Derek, what do you think? Michigan? I'm thinking Michigan's going to go Romney. That's a big leap to make, but I don't know how big it is because, you know what, in 2010, we went a Republican state legislature, a Republican state Senate, and a Republican governor, a Republican secretary of state, and a Republican attorney general. This state is red, red, red as of 2010, and I believe people are going to vote for a change because even liberal Democrats, and if you're in the Ann Arbor, 734-822-1600, and you're Democrat or liberal, call in. Are you really going to vote for Obama? He hasn't helped anybody with the gay marriage issue. He's done nothing for immigration. If you're a Hispanic or an illegal immigrant or an immigrant, I don't know why you would be voting for him. He hasn't done anything for immigration, even though he controlled both sides of the House. All right, normally we'd be leaving, but we're not. Stay with us for another half hour of The Drift, and we'll catch you on the other side.
Listeners, I'm Edwin Hoffman, host of Speaking of Art. Every Sunday at 5 p.m., we explore the world of art and antiques, commercially, academically, and from the perspective of the collector. Speaking of Art features renowned guests as our guides as we visit great museums, galleries, theaters, and historic sites. We'll examine paintings, prints, sculpture, and drawings. You'll hear from the artists and their patrons, and you'll gain a special insight into both contemporary and historical periods. We'll travel through monuments of world architecture and experience the evolution of design. Achievements in film, music, and stage will also grace our forum. Speaking of Art is one of the best conversations of your week. So, nestle into an overstuffed chair and join our room full of connoisseurs every Sunday at 5 on WHAM. Speaking of Art, it's about civilization, yours.
Settle in for a great conversation every Sunday at 5 p.m. Speaking of Art with Ed Hoffman, exclusively on WHAM Talk 1600. WAAM Ann Arbor. Our First Amendment at work. Real public radio. Unbiased. Open and honest discussion.
24 hours a day.
WHAM Radio.
WHAM. Talk 1600.
If you've never been to the Rock Shop on Gottfredson, get ready to be amazed. To experience the Rock Shop is to see how utterly beautiful your home can be. From a magnificent collection of brick pavers to unlimited possibilities of retaining walls, slate patios, statuary, and fountains. The Rock Shop on Gottfredson has it all, and they'll teach you to install for free. You'll get one-to-one instruction, no charge. The Rock Shop serves the entire Southeast Michigan area as a full supplier of landscaping supplies and materials. Their selection spans across more than 12 acres of property, making the Rock Shop one of the largest hard landscape supply companies in Michigan. Make sure to stop by the Rock Shop in Plymouth, north of M14 at exit 15, southwest corner of Gottfredson Road and North Territorial. Check online at rock-shop.com. That's rock-shop.com, rockshoppe.com, or call 734-455-5560.
The Salvation Army and WHAM Talk 1600 are pleased to present the 6th annual 1600 Toys for 1600 Girls and Boys Christmas Toy Drive. We need your help to make sure every needy child in Washtenaw County has a happy holiday. Toys are needed for young teens, too. Games, CDs, DVDs, sports equipment, jewelry, and makeup. You can donate a new unwrapped toy to one of our sponsor locations. In Ann Arbor, Gold Crown Jewelers, Dixboro General Store, USA Hockey, Two Men in a Truck, George Meyer Company, Kmart, Garris, and Garris Law, Hogback Office Center, Cozy Home Solutions, Treasure Mart, in Ypsilanti, Gene Butman Ford, Michigan Firehouse Museum, Kmart, Dr. Michael Singleton, DDS Celine. Together, we can collect 1,600 toys for 1,600 girls and boys. The 6th annual 1,600 Toys for 1,600 Girls and Boys Christmas Toy Drive.
I'm Susan Lucci. More than 2 million Americans have a type of irregular heartbeat called atrial fibrillation, or AFib, putting them at greater risk of stroke.
I'm Dr. David Willis, and I frequently see patients with AFib, a serious condition where a blood clot can travel from the heart to the brain, causing a stroke.
When I found out my husband, Helmut, had AFib, I pledged to learn everything I could.
Susan and I, along with my doctor, work as a team to help reduce my risk of AFib-related stroke.
Visit FacingAFib.com today.
This is the Clark Cast with Matt Clark.
So the question here tonight is not where we've been.
No.
Where we're going.
Yeah, it's not where we've been. It's where we're going.
In other words, don't look at my past. Don't look at my history. No. Ignore those 4 years. That's not the thing. It's not where we've been. It's where we're going. Because, I mean, the president can't run on his record, can he? What did he do?
Don't miss the Clark Cast. Live Sunday afternoons, 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern.
The views, opinions, and content of this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of this station or its management.
Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for... Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
Welcome back, and thank you for catching my drift this extended half hour today for pre-election coverage. Now, Tuesday is Election Day. It's time for us to make a change. We're going over an article by Michael Baroni of Washington Examiner, and he's telling us that he's giving the election to Romney with 48 hours left to go. He is saying his difference between at least him and I is he thinking Ohio will definitely go to Obama. I'm not sure it will. They've got 18 electoral votes. Michigan has 16. And I think if here in Michigan we can go red and give Romney this shot. I mean, let's face it. We've given Obama 4 years. He said he would fix things. He has not. It's time to give somebody else a shot. I mean, Romney's a businessman. Let's get the lawyers out of the White House and put a businessman into the White House. Let's give it a shot, shall we? But he's going on to saying 13, which is electoral votes from Virginia, will go to Romney. Colorado will go Romney. Iowa will go Romney. Now, you saw this last week that the Des Moines Register endorsed Romney. Now, that's huge. That's really huge. So it's a very good chance that that's going to go. Minnesota, of course, is kind of a tree-hugger state. It's going to go for Obama. New Hampshire's only 4 electoral votes, but he's given that to Obama or to Romney. He's giving Pennsylvania to Romney. This morning on the Drudge, they're showing neck and neck, which, you know, imagine 2 or 3 weeks ago, Romney was down huge in Pennsylvania. But I think people are slowly coming around. The momentum that he keeps talking about really is there. I think people have had enough. They're not going to go for it. Nevada, of course, with the big unions and the casinos, are going to go Obama. There's probably no doubt about that. Wisconsin, I think, like Michigan, may very well go for Romney as well, because that's 10 votes. And for a Scott Walker to survive a recall, despite the best the unions could do, tells me that that state may well be ready to go red. Oregon on the West Coast, New Mexico, New Jersey will all go for Obama. He is giving Michigan to Obama. I don't think that's true. Bottom line, Romney, 315 electoral votes to Obama's 223. That's Michael Baroni's best guess for the election. And I have to probably agree with it. I don't want to say it's going to be a Reagan-Carter landslide, but I'm going to make my prediction of Romney's going to be up by 5 points, 5 percentage points. I think that's going to be a good call. I'm hoping it's better than that, but I'm going to think 5 is it. Now, when we talk about the election, it's just as important to look at our Senate race this year. Here in the state of Michigan, we've got Debbie Stabenow asking for re-election yet again. This woman hasn't passed a budget in almost 4 years now in the Senate, and it's part because of her and Harry Reid not wanting to. I mean, the House, when we gave the House back to the Republicans 2 years ago in 2010, they passed a budget. They did their job. The Senate said no. They won't even discuss it. And for Debbie Stabenow not to stand up and say, let's at least vote on it, let's at least discuss it, she won't do that because she doesn't want you to see that she's voting no on balancing the budget. She doesn't want to balance the budget. Debbie Spendalot, we're going to have to play that before the end of the show, Derek. Debbie Stabenow Spendalot wants to spend your money. She's a bureaucrat. She's hooked on your money. She's an addict. We need to get the addict out of power, get her out of office, because Romney can't do this alone. You can give the presidency to Romney. We can retain the House. But if you don't have the Senate, you're still going to have gridlock. It is important to give Romney the tools he needs to do the job. Give him the same shot you gave Obama. Give the Republicans the House and the Senate for 2 years at least and see what happens. Give it to them. We can balance this budget. And I'm hoping we're not going to do it in 10 years' time. I'm hoping they're going to do it sooner than that. but we need to give him the tools. Now, Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, said this about Mitt Romney, because Mitt Romney's been saying, listen, I can reach across the aisle. I did it in Massachusetts as governor when 85% of the House was Democrats to his Republican. He's calling himself a reach across the aisle kind of guy. Now, Harry Reid squashed that by saying this: Mitt Romney's fantasy that Senate Democrats will work with him to pass his severely conservative agenda is laughable. Reid said in a statement referring to Romney's description of his own political leanings during the GOP primaries. In fact, Mitt Romney's Tea Party agenda has already been rejected in the Senate. So he's calling Mitt Romney a Tea Party guy. Listen to me, Harry Reid. Mitt Romney is not a Tea Party guy. There's just no way he's a Tea Party guy. He wasn't conservative enough for most of the Tea Party people. He's having trouble getting Tea Party support. So don't tell me, Harry Reid, that he's a Tea Party guy. He's not. It's another reason we have to de-elect and put Pete Hoekstra into office. Get rid of Debbie Stabenow. Please, I'm begging you, Michigan, do not vote for Debbie Stabenow again. She's not doing her job. She can't even pass a simple budget. All right, so let's move on. Another way that's a former Chrysler executive endorses Romney for president. Now, this follows up on Lee Iacocca last week endorsing Romney. All right, you car guys out there, all you Democrats, you remember Lee Iacocca, solid Democrat, old school Democrat, not the liberal progressive clowns that have taken over the Democratic Party today. Lee Iacocca last week endorsed Romney. And this week, former Chrysler executive Hal Sperlich, who is the president of Chrysler, called the disagreement between the auto company and the former Massachusetts governor a distraction in USA Today op-ed endorsing Romney. All right, so here you go, Chrysler endorsing Romney. Ex-Chrysler guys. That should tell you something. It should tell you that, you know what, they understand business. And the business of America is business. Now, we got a call from Mike in Livonia. Mike, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, my disappointment with both parties boils down to this. You know, whether it's Romney or Obama, they're both going to be growing the government. Romney at a slower rate than Obama, but the government is still going to grow. And it's this baseline budgeting that was invented in 1972, which allows the government to expect to grow at a certain rate every year, unchecked, needs to a candidate who truly says they want to stop the growth in Washington and needs to say we're gonna outlaw baseline budgeting. And to your point about Lee Iacocca, where I'm in total agreement with you and the other gentleman who was president, what I see evolving in the United States now is you have the new Democrats, which are the public sector, large government workers like Greece, and then you're seeing a growing split coming between the private sector union members, other than maybe the UAW, because they're really in bed with the government. But your carpenters, your millwrights, your electricians, your plumbers, your worker, your membership who are actually out there working every day and paying a huge amount of taxes to fund this largesse of the government union members, you know, their extravagant pensions, their extravagant medical benefits. You go look at any private sector union member, of which I get my benefits from one of them. I have a $30 copay on my prescription that I have to take generic. So you go tell that to a public sector person who's paying $2 to $5, no copay going to the doctor. My copay is $25. To just start having parity to private sector union members and the hundreds of billions of dollars that it would save taxpayers like you and I as we try to fund these guys and gals retiring at 50 with 75% of their pay and lifetime medical benefits. Whoever did their actuarial tables, they need to be reschooled. And, you know, I'm just a dumb truck driver, and I got this thing figured out.
Right, absolutely, Mike. You're hitting it right on the head, because right here in the state of Michigan, and this, you can find this on Michigan Capital Confidential, $5 billion a year can be saved if the state of Michigan would make state employees' pensions and benefits equivalent to what the private sector. If you base it on what the private sector is making, you'll save $5 billion a year.
Now, we only need to look at what Brooks Patterson did in Oakland County back in the 90s. He took all of the Oakland County workers, took them off defined pension plans, and put them all onto 401ks. They have the highest bond rating in the state and one of the highest bond ratings in the country. And I don't see a bunch of Oakland County workers all reveling, saying that they're not being compensated fairly and they're not making a decent wage in Oakland County. They're not all running to go work in Wayne County or whatever. Oakland County did the right thing a long time ago and they had a lot of vision, and they really need, that should be the model for the rest of the state, is how Oakland County handles its public sector employees.
Right.
Employment.
Yeah, and that's because he's got a good business attitude. You know what I mean?
Patterson has got a great team in with him.
Yeah, yeah. So, Mike, excellent call. Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention, and thank you so much for listening.
Have a great day.
You too. All right, so Mike hits it right on the head there. I mean, private unions, there is a connection, a non-connection between the private and public sector unions. And I think eventually you will see a third party in this country. I think it's going to happen eventually. And don't get me wrong. I mean, Romney is not the final solution. He is a step in the right direction. Will he slow the growth or will he actually cut the growth? I'm going to push. People asked me the other day, they said, Gary, what are you going to talk about if Romney wins? I said, the job is just beginning if Romney wins. We have to keep the fire under his feet, as well as our senators and congressmen, to get a balanced budget. You can take everything else off the table. I don't care about who we're going to try and spend money on at this point. We need to get a balanced budget. Then, once the budget is balanced, we can start talking about where to spend what we have. A drowning man can't save a sinking swimmer. We're drowning in $1 trillion-plus dollars in debt every year, going on to the $16 trillion we already have. So we need to balance the budget. That is the key, and Romney has to work on that. And if he doesn't work on it in the 4 years he gets into office, then we try somebody else. That simple. But we have to try something different than what we've got going. Now, I'm hoping that the listeners can call in and educate me a little bit on our next subject. But before we do that, let's take a call from it's Mike Day. Mike in Ann Arbor, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Gary. The economy is important. Definitely is, but I think the most important thing in this election is our constitutional freedoms. And if we don't vote and don't vote against Obama and vote for Romney, we're going to lose our freedoms and everything else is of no consequence. We have to save the Constitution, we have to save the United States, and we have to vote anti-Obama, period. There's nothing more important than the freedom and independence of this country, and we're going to lose it if we get another 4 years of Obama.
Excellent point.
Thank you.
Excellent point, Mike. Thank you. You know, that is the truth. Spoken like a true conservative, our freedom and our values put forth in the Constitution need to be upheld. And what we've seen with the liberal progressive Democrats over the years has been a deterioration of those constitutional values. So another good reason, vote for Romney. Pat from West Brighton. Pat, welcome to the show.
Gary, it's great to hear you for an extended half hour today.
Oh, well, thank you, Pat. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So in agreement with Mike and in agreement with you, when you talk about the third party, we definitely have to get the third party engaged. And one of the things that it needs to be engaged on is what Mike brought up relative to what Patterson did in Oakland County by making the public employees basically private employees by ensuring that they invest their money in a 401k versus the pension dynamic. And I think if we can get the politicians in Washington to do the same thing and work under the same guidelines that you and I work under, whether it's health care, pensions, job for life, all of these kind of things, I think that's the next thing that needs to get played out. And as far as the election's concerned, I hope that the lack of third party that we're hearing right now, because it really isn't a compelling dynamic from a candidate like Ron Paul or anything like that, I think will enable Romney to take it home.
Right. I'm hoping so, too. I was kind of hoping, I don't know that this will happen, I was kind of hoping that prior to the election, Romney would have had the guts to take somebody like Ron Paul and say, I'm going to make an appointment to the cabinet right now and put a guy like Ron Paul as Treasury Secretary. Let's audit that Fed. Let's stop with the QE3s ruining the value of our dollar. But I don't know that he's going to do that. I would hope that would bring in those third-party Ron Paul people to back Romney, even because they may not be comfortable enough with him. But I think you hit it on the head, Pat. This time around, we have to vote for Romney. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, because any other vote is a vote for Obama. if you're diluting the vote to go conservative by voting for Gary Johnson or somebody else, you're just giving a vote to Obama, frankly.
Yeah, and you brought that up a multitude of times over this election period, and I think that's absolutely critical. I know a couple of the callers had been a little disappointed in Romney in general. I think what we've seen over the debates and kind of the end, the home stretch of this this running, that you know, Romney is presidential. Romney does have good ideas. Romney is willing to team up with a collective team to make some decisions, and that hasn't happened in the last 4 years. We've had a guy that's basically trying to do what his agenda is, despite you know, what the majority is saying in the country.
Right. Awesome. Well, Pat, thank you so much for your viewpoint. We've got Ken from Livonia calling in. And Ken, how are you?
Doing pretty good. I had to bring up the topic of freedom, you know, how important it is with this election and everything. But the one freedom that I get a lot of criticism from Republicans on is freedom of religion. My religious convictions, my religious beliefs, and I don't have a problem if someone disagrees with me, but don't disrespect me. My religious beliefs will not allow me to vote for Mitt Romney. Now, I don't like Obama. I can't stand Obama, but I can't rewrite the Bible. I can't rewrite my personal religious convictions. So don't give me a hard time because I can't vote for Romney.
Right. Now, let me ask again. So is that, because you've called in a number of times, I've been trying for 9 months to persuade you. So it's actually a religious conviction of yours that's keeping you from voting for Romney?
Yes, I'm a Christian. I'm a Trinitarian.
Okay.
There is a Christian on the Michigan ballot, on the national ballot, who's a Baptist. I can vote for him.
Okay.
Because of my personal religious beliefs.
Okay.
I can't vote for someone who is a non-Christian.
Okay, so you're saying Romney's a non-Christian?
Mormonism rejects the triune God of the Bible. Mormons, they can call themselves Christian all they want, but they are not Christian.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good. I'd like to be educated on that because I know nothing about Mormonism. I thought they just had a couple extra gospels. But save that one, Ken. I'm not gonna hit on you if that's your conviction. Is I had no idea. All the times we've talked on the phone, I never had that that it was a religious thing with you. So absolutely, my friend, you are entitled to your opinion. Then I had no idea that was your hang up with him.
Well, here's the simple thing. The Bible teaches the triune God, three distinct personalities with one Godhead.
Okay.
Now, the Roman Catholic Church, Baptists, Lutherans, the Eastern Orthodox Church, all of these churches teach the triune God. Mormonism completely rejects the concept of the triune God.
Okay, so hold on a second, Ken. Let me do this. Sure. I want you to send me an email because you know what? We're going to have that discussion after the election. We're going to get a group of people, and you're going to be one of them sitting in here in front of me. We're going to have that discussion because that sounds like a very interesting discussion. So let me hang on because I want to get through some of this stuff before the election. I got 10 minutes left on the show, but send me an email, gary@thedailydrift.com. I want to get you sitting in the studio with a few other people, and we're going to have a hot and heated debate about that. Are you in?
Well, I don't have email, but I can call in when you do have that discussion.
Okay, call into Derek and give me your phone number, don't hang up. I'll put you on hold. Give Derek your number. I'm going to have you in the studio, and we're going to talk about religion.
Well, you take care.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Okay, so I had no idea Ken was that was the hang-up with him. But maybe an educated listener can call me in. The jobs report came out. 7.9% is the unemployment rate. It ticked up a little bit, and both sides are claiming yes and no. It's good. It's bad. But something that confuses me is the U.S. economy added an estimated 171,000 jobs in October. So 171,000 got added. But according to Bloomberg Business, jobless claims decreased by 9,000, meaning only 363,000 people actually filed their first-time unemployment claim. So 363 people got laid off and 171 got hired. How is that job growth? Am I reading this wrong? I'd like to know if I'm confused. I'd like someone to set me straight. I don't understand how that's job growth. If 171,000 jobs are created, but 363,000 were lost in October, how is that job creation? How is that a step in the right direction? Can someone please call in or email me and tell me what where my math is off? I've been wondering about this for months now, looking at it, shaking my head, thinking, what are they talking about? Maybe I'm a complete buffoon. But 171,000 jobs created versus 363,000 new layoffs doesn't add up to positive job results for me. So if somebody has an idea what I'm reading wrong here, please call in. So you know what? On economic policies and job growth, Obama fails. It's an epic failure. Let's talk about Obama on household median incomes. Down 8.2% since Obama took office. Okay? If we're talking economy, Obama's not doing the job. About $4,500 less in your household budget than 4 years ago. How is that a step in the right direction? How is that forward? Forward to communism? Forward to a lesser America? When it comes to household incomes, Obama is an epic fail. I'm running through this. How about this one? I think some of you may have seen this. Food stamp growth, 75 times greater than job creation over the last 4 years. How is that a step in the right direction? How is it that anyone in the world would want 4 more years of that? Food stamps are now 42 million people on food stamps compared to 27 million a few years back. I'm trying to dig through my papers here. That's outrageous. That's not the kind of growth. That's not the forward movement this country needs. This economy is stagnating or getting worse. How anybody can say things are getting better is unbelievable. It's not. Economy, Obama, epic failure. Epic failure. It's time for a change, real change, not the hopeless change that Obama promised in 2008. You know, we didn't vet the man properly. He had no experience whatsoever. Hadn't even finished his first term as senator. No foreign experience. And yet he has the nerve to tell Romney and Ryan have no experience. That's outrageous. Let's talk about foreign relations. Let's talk about Libyagate, since you won't find it on ABC, NBC, or CBS. CBS actually broke it, but haven't spoke about it since. What has happened in Libya? In Libya, you have had the President of the United States and his top staff lie to you, the American people. Lie to you repeatedly. Let's try track three, Derek, on what I call Libyagate.
Action's another, and this is a third. Libya, new signs of a communications breakdown in the Obama administration during the terror attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. U.S. intel sources telling Fox News that senior counterterrorism officials felt shut out while potentially life-saving decisions were being made on the ground.
All right, so you've been following the story for months now. U.S. ambassador murdered, four Americans murdered, and yet the answers you've gotten from the Obama administration have, at first they blamed a video, had the ambassador go out weeks afterward and still say, yeah, it's a video. The father who went to pick up his son's body was told by Hillary Clinton, that man who made the video, we're going to put him in jail. When all the time they knew darn well there was no video-induced mob in front of the consulate in Benghazi. None. Zero. Zip. And yet they told you, the American people, that there was, and that's how Chris Stevens died. They knew the day of. They had real-time information. They had a terrorist group claiming responsibility, and yet they lied to us for weeks afterward. And now you see information dribbling out, a little bit at a time. They were asking for help. They should have been pulled out of there long ago. If you're not going to give them help, pull them out. The Brits pulled their people out. Red Cross pulled their people out. They knew. And yet, for some reason, the Obama administration said, let's leave them in there. And let's leave them in there with no help, with no security. So the CIA comes out with a new timeline now, stating that, no, there was no conspiracy or cover-up. It was just, you know, a failure. And yet, this morning on Drudge, not so fast on the timeline. Despite a carefully narrated version of events rolled out late this week by the CIA, claiming that agents jumped into action as soon as they were notified of calls for help in Benghazi, security officials on the ground say calls for help went out considerably earlier, and signs of an attack were mounting even before that. So now even the CIA narrative is wrong. Who are we to believe, and why are we as an American people not getting this journalism, true journalism, from anybody but Jennifer Graham at Fox? Why is ABC, why is George Stephanopoulos, the complete liberal progressive hack that he is, not covering this story? Jake Tapper at ABC is covering it, and yet they don't even bother giving him nightly news coverage. He's the only journalist at ABC. That news organization is a disgrace. Now, we all knew NBC was a disgrace. They don't cover anything that hurts Obama. But why isn't the American people being given this coverage? Go to thedailydrift.com or currentonline.com and click on The Daily Drift, and you will see stories from Reuters, from the London Times, The Telegraph. We have to go overseas to get information. How is that conceivably possible in this country? Barack Obama needs to be unelected on Tuesday. For the sake of our country, for the sake of our children and our grandchildren, we need to make a positive right turn. Go through your emails. Make sure you have everybody you know voting for Romney. If you care about this country, if you care about your future and your children's future, vote Romney this election. Until next week, we'll see you.